65. They were both born May 19th. Happy birthday, Malcolm. Happy birthday, Yuri. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk About Race. I like to end the show by saying every day and in every way, we hope you agitate for social change. Thank you for listening.
For more information on Let's Talk About Race, visit us on social media. We're on Facebook at Let's Talk Race 1, or check us out on Instagram at LTAR Show or www.letstalkrace.net.
The following program has been produced by Grassroot News Northwest.
KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous, but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune in to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus, Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we get started, I want to let you all know that KBOO has been on the air for 55 years, making us one of the oldest community radio stations in the country, and one of the longest-standing media institutions in Portland. And we've been able to remain commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community because of support from amazing people like you. In fact, 80% of the station's funding comes from the generosity of our members. So if you can, please help us continue to serve this wonderful community by donating today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. So now to the discussion we're going to be having today, declaring that understaffing has them, you know, quote, running on empty, 5,000 nurses, doctors, midwives, and nurse practitioners walked off the job January 10th in an open-ended strike at Providence Health and Services, which is the dominant hospital chain here in the Pacific Northwest. The strikers work at 8 hospitals plus a few women's clinics across the state of Oregon. And the unions that represent these workers are the Oregon Nurses Association, or the ONA, and the Pacific Northwest Hospital Medicine Association, and both of which are organized under the American Federation of Teachers, or the AFT. The major demands that have been put forward by the union are demands for proper staffing, affordable health insurance for themselves, and competitive pay that can attract and retain seasoned workers. And another, yeah, like as I just mentioned, one of the main reasons, you know, obviously pay is a big thing.
Yeah.
But one of the things that actually seems kind of strange, you know, almost unless you don't, if you don't think about it too much, is that the workers themselves at this health, at the healthcare facilities, are receiving inadequate health insurance and health coverage for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important to call out too, you know, we don't talk about this very often. A lot of times you think of wages for yourself. But again, Providence, from what we could gather, does appear to have lower wages than other healthcare institutions in the area. Yeah. Like OHSU, for example, people make more money there. So it's been hard for them to retain nurses and kind of, you know, keep the staffing levels at appropriate levels.
Yeah. And that's a big thing when there are so many hospitals in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, why would someone who, you know, maybe gets into the nursing field and maybe cuts their teeth at Providence, why would they not jump to OHSU or to Kaiser or one of the other, you know, mm-hmm. local healthcare facilities when they would be offering more money? And then on top of that, you also have the influx, especially, you know, since the COVID era, of traveling nurses.
Yeah.
And those, the companies that provide those to hospitals and to healthcare facilities, pay them much more than what someone who works for a regular hospital and especially at Providence would make.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, with so much happened to the healthcare industry over COVID.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this, you know, attempts to return, get back into the black and return to profitability, there has been a high, it's coming down, but there's been a high reliance on contract work. And basically keeping your full-time staff levels at below needed and then filling in the difference with contract work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's certainly not a model that is unique to the healthcare industry, but
yeah.
It has been very much the game that they've played since COVID. Mm-hmm. So these, you know, the coordinated strikes include workers whose contract had just expired and others who have been working without a contract for a year or are still bargaining their first contract agreement. So this is an open-ended strike, and an open-ended strike itself is sort of a rare thing to have happen in the healthcare field. Unions are actually required to file a 10-day notice to employers before striking in healthcare workplaces, just to ensure that arrangements are able to be made for patients' care to yep. continue through that strike. So that also means, as we were just discussing, that replacement nurse agencies are a big industry. And, you know, while it is more expensive to pay for these workers who will cross the picket line, the deep pockets of these hospitals do allow them the ability to wait out the strikers by simply paying for their replacements.
Yes, and I think what we've seen from kind of putting all the information together for this show, that this is not the first time that Providence has had to deal with striking nurses. In 2023, there was a 5-day strike, and in 2024, there was a 3-day strike, both with different groups of nurses. Mm-hmm. And the situation we're facing here is another different group of nurses. The striking group in 2024 actually ended up signing a new contract which we'll get into, we'll talk about, but it has a lot of the similar kind of wins as the one that Providence is trying to kind of put onto this striking group of nurses.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, so like this is one of the big complaints that the union, they actually filed a grievance with the National Labor Relations Board over this. Mm-hmm. One of the big complaints that they have is that once the 10-day notice was filed and then the 10 days prior to the strike was reached, management with Providence simply walked away from the table and ended negotiations with them. And so the unions claim that that was them, you know, not operating in good faith.
Yeah.
The argument from management was that basically they needed that time to staff up and to take their, you know, to put all their resources towards hiring replacements to keep care provided to the patients throughout the course of the strike.
For sure, for sure. They seemingly walked away from the negotiations after receiving that notice. And from our reading, you know, the strike notice was given because the union basically didn't feel like they were putting their best foot forward, like you said.
Yeah.
And also because they have seen this tactic be used.
Right.
Essentially, the current leadership at Providence is using these same tactics kind of again and again.
Yeah.
In a hope to basically just cut the bleeding and cut the losses and just give out this kind of same deal to each group of nurses.
Exactly. And yeah, like, you know, it's one thing for them to say, okay, well, we need to take this time and really, because obviously, like, there are patients still in the hospitals, there are patients coming in, they need to be providing them care. You can't just be turning everyone away during this time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unless my understanding of how big organizations work is very off, it does seem like the people negotiating the contract with the unions might not be the same people who are in fact out there hiring replacement staff. Like, I think that, you know, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Like, they could, they could have been doing both. And so it does seem like that is sort of a bad faith approach on the part of the management to basically say, okay, well, we see that you've said you're going to strike, so therefore we're going to walk away and claim that it's simply because we have to focus all our energy on staffing up. Mm-hmm. And so, especially considering that they have had this same approach for the previous three strikes, it on the management side, they might have looked at it like, okay, well, we know that the workers are going to go out and strike over this anyway, so why would we bother to continue to negotiating? But the reality is that, like, if they had actually stayed at the table, they might have been able to avert the strike in the first place and save.
Well, and they've been at the table for over a year. Right. You know, the ONA has come out and talked about basically the last couple of weeks about how, you know, this isn't just the start of the negotiations. They've been at this for well over a year, a little over a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, from our look at this, it just seems like Providence is trying to give out the same deal that they did before, right?
Yeah.
And this group of nurses, this larger group of nurses that wields more power, is not looking to do that,
right?
You know, we'll get into the exact offering here in a little bit, you know, but wage increases don't just necessarily deal with all of the issues that they're facing, right? You know, how many patients are assigned to each nurse? You know, you mentioned healthcare for themselves within the same, you know, working in the same network, so. They're looking for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, according to the union's, the ONA's social media page, you know, quote, Providence has delayed the bargaining process by arriving late to negotiations and unprepared. Mm-hmm. They have been given weeks to fulfill information requests submitted by the union, but routinely ignore deadlines. At six of the bargaining units, Providence asked ONA to agree to federal mediators without even all of the articles being present,
mm-hmm.
end quote. And so, yeah, it does seem like the approach on the part of management has been kind of the same across all of their the times that their workers have gone on strike. And so seeing how they have dealt with it in the previous times, the union, I think, maybe rightfully believes that they were not negotiating in good faith when they walked away from the table 10 days prior to the strike.
Yeah. And so Providence is actually offering 20% wage increases to nurses basically over the course of 3 years, as well as a spot one-time bonus for basically some back pay that has occurred, or basically, you know, contract status is being up in the air in the past. In addition to that, because, you know, we haven't touched on it, but one of the most gigantic parts of this strike is that there are actual doctors striking with the nurses.
Yes.
And in this case, they've actually offered 20 to 30K wage increases to physicians that are on strike. There's about 70 of them across this entire strike. And in addition to that, there's some other kind of medical administrative folks, like at women's clinics and different things like that.
Yeah.
But again, 70 actual doctors on strike kind of with nurses.
And that really does seem unprecedented. I mean, I'm sure that there have been other instances of doctors themselves going on strike, but it does seem like it portends like a larger trend within the healthcare industry and probably across the economy in general. But, you know, when you think about a doctor, or when maybe even a doctor thinks about themselves, or if someone's going to medical school imagining themselves becoming a doctor, you see it as a prestigious job that you're taking on, and, you know, similar to what like a lawyer would see themselves as, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
you will be there doing it for the love of healthcare, you know, and providing care for your patients. And you probably don't think of yourself as just a worker. And for a long time, that likely has been the case. You know, a lot of doctors go and they form practices with, you know, other doctors. So it is just owned by physicians themselves.
Yeah.
But now, because of, you know, constraints within the industry and rising costs, a lot of doctors have had to move into the systems, you know, the larger healthcare systems. And that means that they really, you know, end up just being workers right along with the nurses and the other staff in the hospital. And I think, you know, it seems like in this case, they're finally starting to see themselves as such and realize that if the nurses are you know, being squeezed and having issues with their benefits and their pay, and they are willing to go out on a strike for it, the doctors are also in the same boat, and the company is doing the same thing to them, and they're actually, they're more in line or have more in common with the nurses than with management.
Yeah, I think, you know, healthcare is not unique in the fact that it is seeing the kind of small and medium-sized parts of its industry being squeezed out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, you don't see the same indie movies anymore. It's kind of these big blockbusters, right? So kind of being in the healthcare game takes so much overhead costs and all these sorts of things because you're competing against these massive companies that, you know, to your point, doctors are having to come back and basically be employed as opposed to being the owners of their own business. And you're 100% right. They can't continue to view themselves as other than when they clearly are labor.
Yeah, like it's hard to imagine yourself as this, you know, yeoman worker, you know, doing it for yourself when you aren't in control of the conditions that you're working in, when you don't get to dictate your patient load, or you don't get to dictate, you know, the nursing staffing around you. You know, when you aren't in control of that, it becomes a lot more clear that like you are no longer in charge, but you are just a cog, you're a worker.
I think too, it can be hard to kind of visualize sometimes that, you know, a doctor or a nurse advocating for themselves isn't just about them as well. It literally creates a safer environment for patients. It, you know, the stuff they're asking for, you know, while the money side of it has to be figured out, right, is going to create a safer environment and these sorts of things. It's not just wages that – it's not the same as some of the other kind of things that we've been talking about, right? Whether we're, you know, talking about a gig economy Uber driver.
Right.
This is not – it's not the same in that, you know, these wage increases literally lead to a different environment for people who are sick and patients that need care.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not that like other jobs – you know, we've talked a lot on this show about, you know, something like Amazon facility workers – you know, going on strike because of unsafe working conditions for themselves and their coworkers. I mean, that is absolutely unsafe for people, you know, the worker and the people around them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can then have downstream effects to the public that they are, you know, whether the delivery driver.
But they're just more indirect than literally a patient inside of the same facility that you're working in.
Exactly. Like we are talking about literally people receiving healthcare and, you know, making sure that the doctor is giving you the right treatment and maybe not confusing you with someone else, or maybe the nurse has so many patients that they're dealing with that they can, you know, they are just neglecting something or they overlook something, and that leads to negative outcomes for you or a loved one. Like that is a direct effect that this understaffing understaffing is having on the public and on you as an individual. And so therefore what the workers, the doctors and the nurses are fighting for is actually directly applicable to public good and to public health.
Yeah. So, you know, just coming back to kind of the what's been happening, right, is so obviously, you know, they were negotiating for a lot of the last year. Providence backed out, like we talked about, and they've kind of come back to the table now that they announced back on January 10th that they are willing now to come back to the table. On January 14th that they're willing to come back to the table.
Yeah.
And so we have yet to see a date being selected, but we're happy to see that. Our guess is that Providence is hoping that the wage increases that they're offering, combined with them kind of slowing this process down as much as possible and dealing with people who care about the community and their patients and who want to get back to work, can allow them to kind of get this deal done without having to go over basically the state mandated nurse to patient ratios that were actually passed in August of 2023 and signed into law by Governor Kotick.
Yeah.
So Oregon is actually the second state in the United States to have passed a nurse to patient law. And basically what it says is that, you know, certified nursing assistants will have a 1-to-7 ratio on the day shift. So basically one nursing assistant to every 7 patients, and then a 1-to-11 on a night shift. Surgical nurses are a little bit different. They'll have a 1-to-5 for right now, which started in June of this year. And then it actually drops to 1-to-4 in June of 2026. And intensive care nurses have a patient ratio of 1-to-2. But the ONA is basically saying that, you know, while nice, this law doesn't actually go far enough and does not create a safe environment for patients, basically.
That's a great point because, you know, and I obviously, I've never worked in this industry.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like, but I would imagine that, you know, intensive care, being a nurse in an intensive care unit, like one nurse to two patient ratio, mm-hmm. is probably itself already overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are having to basically deal with someone at all moments of your shift and, you know, deal with all of the things that they have to do, whether that's, you know, simple movements like getting water or getting up to the bathroom, any of the things that the doctor needs from you, like that is probably a full-time gig. And if you have two patients that you're dealing with, that's probably already beyond the pale. And then, you know, looking at the other ratios there, that doesn't seem like they've brought it down significantly enough. Like for the certified nursing assistants, you know, one nurse to 11 patients, bringing it down to 1 to 7, that's still, you know, that's not a huge difference down there.
Yeah. And I think too, right, again, I think what Providence, just reading their actions, right, not anything else, just, you know, not the words, right, not the interviews that we've seen, but just the actions, it looks like, in my reading, that Providence is just, like I said, hoping that the wage increases can kind of be dangled as a carrot to basically not solve the more costly and painful realization, which is that their system is understaffed, right? And I think, you know, to be fair to Providence, you know, in our reading, they have operated at a loss in tons of the last quarters. I think it was 8 out of the last 10 quarters they operated at a loss.
Yeah, it was something around that.
And so again, you know, to be fair to them, that is the case. However, we do want to call out that Providence's higher patient volumes actually drove a corresponding increase in operating expenses, like we were talking about, but it also led to higher revenues and EBITDA. And a lot of that was driven by the increase in patients being brought in. And also it was done by a lot of basically increases in efficiency by the nursing staff and the physicians within the hospitals. So, you know, it's like, we kind of have to pick a side here of, you know, are we getting more efficient? Are we helping patients more regularly? Or are we operating at a net loss because this is too hard of an industry? In addition to that, throughout, you know, we mentioned that there's been multiple other strikes happening. The strike in 2024 led to an increase in wages very similar to what they're offering to this nursing group. And actually, their operating losses have dropped since doing so, right? Because of this increase in patients.
Yeah.
You know, they've had some other difficulties around, you know, like the cost of supplies and different things like that. But it's clear to us that a lot of the operating issues are actually not the full-time salaried nurses that they're being paid. Most of it is the contract work, mm-hmm. which the reason a lot of their operating expenses have gone down is because they've reduced the amount of contract work. So what do you know?
Yeah.
Full-time, trained, you know, happy nurses are going to be more efficient, allow you to bring in more patients and to kind of address some of the post-COVID issues that I wouldn't say Providence is alone in having, right? Yeah. The healthcare industry at large is kind of going through it.
Yeah. And it's a thing that we've talked about, again, like so many times in the show. But when you look at the reality of, you know, a company spending money to try and bust the union or to, you know, spending time and effort to work against negotiating with the union.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately that's money spent against themselves when the better bet is just to negotiate in good faith with the union, find a fair contract, and then have workers that are happy to be there, that feel valued and well compensated and will do the job more efficiently than people who are upset mm-hmm. or who are maybe only temporary would ever be able to do.
Yeah.
And like that is the actual long-term business model.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I don't think we're going to get into the intricacies of running a hospital because neither of us are qualified to talk about that.
Certainly not.
But if you have less patients per nurse, per physician, my assumption would be they would be able to be taken care of at a standard which is higher than current. And ideally, they would spend less days, which would allow you to reduce the cost of each patient, create more outpatient opportunities, and then thus return to profitability.
Yep.
So really, you know, I think there is common ground to be found here. And I think Providence needs to come back to the table, have these discussions, and not try to kind of slither out of this and, you know, just give the same deal they've been giving to the last couple nursing groups that have struck.
Yeah. And a good way to try and prevent that is something that the union is actually, you know, seems to be angling towards, and there has been talk about that being the case, is that they are essentially they're interested in lining up the contract expiration dates of all the different groups so that instead of having the company, the management, be able to negotiate, like spin off smaller groups and negotiate with them against the other workers,
yeah.
having the larger bargaining group come together because all their contracts expire at the same time, yeah. so that they can then go to management and say, together, we all demand these things, not only pay, but also benefits and workplace safety, you know, things that are safe for us and for the patients. Mm-hmm. And if you do that as one larger group going to management, they have to sit down and deal with you, and they can't do it piecemeal.
Exactly. Well, and to your point, you know, the chief executive of Providence, Jennifer Burrows, went on KGW and said that the ONA is basically trying to do exactly what you said, align yeah. all of their contracts as a tactic to gain influence in the industry, which I would argue what body, you know, what corporation or what union or what body of any amount of humans together isn't trying to gain yeah. influence in an industry. and that's one way to put it. But again, I think our vision of this is Providence has taught these nurses, this is how you must act in order to get right. the things that you want. If you do not strike, we are going to drag our feet. We are going to basically offer you a lesser than thing or just give you exactly what we gave to everyone else. And again, with our brief dive into the finances, I think we've proven the full-time nurse part of this is not the problem. It's the contract work. It's the how do we get our supplies in order, right? How do we do these sorts of things? And so again, to me, it's that's what a smart union would do.
Yeah. And like, you know, is it trying to gain influence in the industry or is it simply trying to keep themselves from being bulldozed?
Yeah.
You know, like what union isn't trying to grow its membership base in order to counteract the overwhelming advantage that management and capital has
yeah.
in any negotiation?
Yeah. You can put a spin on it and say they're aligning their contracts to better fight for patients.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you want to really sit down and start to do Absolutely. PR talk around this. So I think it's ridiculous to call it a tactic. Obviously, tactic on its face isn't a negative word, but in the reading of it, it was kind of, placed negatively. So yeah. to me, this is what any smart organization would do.
And it does also ring a little hollow considering that like what they are talking about are healthcare professionals whose calling is to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, like you don't go into nursing necessarily to become vastly wealthy. You do it because you're called to it.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not every single person there feels that same calling, like you, what you are doing is directly helping people. And if you call out that your workplace is chaotic or unsafe or overwhelming, then what you were saying is that you are not able to help directly help people
yeah.
to the level that you believe you should be able to, or that you know can be done. Mm-hmm. And so if you're saying that these people are trying to game the system or find some tactic to get an advantage, what they're actually trying to do is to maximize their ability to help the public. And by standing against that, it really does, you know, when you put it that way, it does end up seeming a lot more like you are just trying to pinch pennies and keep the public from getting the care that they need.
Yeah. 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 You know, and I think we'll just close out here with
yeah.
The not-for-profit part of all of this, I think, is very interesting as well. And we're not going to get into the legalese of it all.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is, you know, labor unions in the healthcare space have really made it so West Coast nurses and West Coast physicians, they really do have a higher quality of work, or at least from a wage and a compensation point of view than a lot of the rest of America. You know, but that doesn't mean that we're meeting the demands, especially as staffing is short and all of these sorts of things. So, you know, we're definitely standing with the nurses union yeah. here and we hope the best for them. And, you know, obviously Providence has announced they're going to come back to the table and I hope it's a good negotiation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will certainly keep appraised of this situation as it unfolds, but unfortunately we are out of time here. So just quickly before we sign off, you are listening to Labor Radio here on listener supported KBOO Community Radio. We want to drop a quick reminder to please consider donating to KBOO now and help us remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community. You can donate today at kboo.fm/give or by mailing your donation to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. We thank you so much for your support. And again, you know, we here at Labor Radio, thank you so much for listening. We are signing off now, but I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Have a great night.
This is Ramona Africa, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your dial. KBOO is the exact example of the community taking charge of itself on the move.